greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
When and where is it going to end? Are we going to let the Israel Defense Forces continue the repeated killing of journalists? There is international law.
Human rights and press freedom groups are denouncing Israel's attack on Nasser Hospital in Gaza that killed at least 21 people, including five journalists. We'll speak to a doctor at Nasser Hospital, as well as Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. She's calling on the international community to break the siege on Gaza and impose an arms embargo and sanctions on Israel. Then to Chicago, as local and state officials push back against President Trump's threat to send in the National Guard.
Mr. President, do not come to Chicago. You are neither wanted here nor needed here.
We'll also look at Trump's new executive orders aiming to end so-called cashless bail. 2 years ago, Illinois became the first state to eliminate the cash bail system. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, three more Palestinians have starved to death over the past 24 hours, bringing the total number of starvation deaths from Israel's siege to 303, including 117 children. Since Monday, Israeli forces have killed at least 75 Palestinians, including 17 people seeking food. This comes as press freedom groups are blasting Israel for the double-tap strike Monday that killed at least 21 people, including five journalists at Nasser Hospital. Hundreds of Palestinians in Gaza City attended funerals for the victims. This is Adli Abu Taha, the brother of slain journalist Moaz Abu Taha.
Take a picture of me, guys. I do not have a single photo with him. We worked together so much, yet I never took even one picture with him.
Meanwhile, Israeli forces killed a sixth journalist in Gaza Monday. Hassan Duhan was a correspondent with Al-Hayat Al-Jadida. He died after he was shot while sheltering in a tent in Al-Mawasi, which Israel's designated as a safe zone despite near constant attacks on the area. In Israel, thousands have blocked roads around the country, including a major highway in Tel Aviv, burning tires, calling for the return of the hostages still held in Gaza and an end to Israel's war on the besieged strip. The protests were led by families of hostages and part of a nationwide day of disruption. Meanwhile, Israel's military chief clashed with far-right ministers Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir about Israel's Gaza City operation, with Smotrich reportedly saying, quote, "Whoever doesn't evacuate, don't let them. No water, no electricity. They can die of hunger or surrender," he said. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces injured 24 Palestinians during a raid in Ramallah, which is ongoing at the time of this broadcast. This comes as Israeli far-right minister Orit Struk has called on Israel to start annexing the West Bank sometime this month. According to a report published by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, Palestinian boys say they have been sexually assaulted and tortured in Israeli custody. The network published photos showing visible signs of torture from shackling and featured accounts of Palestinian teenagers accusing Israeli troops of taking nude photos and mocking and touching their bodies. Scottish police have arrested the award-winning screenwriter Paul Laverty for wearing a T-shirt reading, quote, "Genocide in Palestine, time to take action." The arrest of the 68-year-old took place during a protest in Edinburgh Monday against the UK government's support of Israel's war on Gaza. In the UK, public support of the protest group Palestine Action is a criminal offense under the Terrorism Act. Paul Laverty is a longtime collaborator with the filmmaker Ken Loach. Laverty spoke spoke after he was processed and released with an order to appear in court on September 18th to face terrorism charges.
Although we have the law on our side, we cannot implement it. So I think we have to change the narrative. I think what we have to remember is that the most important court in the world is the court of public opinion. Ordinary people are appalled to see starvation and genocide and the selling of arms to the apartheid state in Israel, and are just appalled by it.
Australia has expelled the Iranian ambassador after its spy agency accused Iran's government of orchestrating two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said that Australia's, quote, credible intelligence, unquote, that Iran was responsible for the arson attacks against a synagogue in Melbourne and a kosher restaurant in Sydney. It's the first time Australia has expelled an ambassador since World War II. A federal judge has blocked the Trump administration from deporting Maryland father Kilmer Abrego Garcia following his rearrest by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. On Monday morning, agents at ICE's office in Baltimore took Abrego Garcia back into custody after he presented himself for a check-in. He'd been free for just 3 days following more than 5 months of detention, including time in the notorious Secat mega prison in El Salvador, to which the Trump administration admitted he was wrongfully deported in an administrative error. On Monday, U.S. District Judge Paula Zinnes ordered the Trump administration not to follow through with its plans to send Abrego Garcia to Uganda, a country he has no ties to. The judge told prosecutors, quote, your clients are absolutely forbidden at this juncture to remove Mr. Abrego Garcia from the continental United States, and asked them to confirm that they understood what she was saying. A new study finds the population of immigrants living in the United States shrank by more than a million people after President Trump retook the White House and imposed new mass deportation policies. The Pew Research Center found a record 53.3 million immigrants were living in the U.S. in January. By June, that number had dropped to just 51.9 million. About three quarters of a million immigrants have dropped out of the U.S. labor force since Trump's second inauguration. The humanitarian aid group SOS Méditerranée said Monday Libya's Coast Guard fired at its rescue vessel while the crew aboard searched for a refugee boat in distress in the Mediterranean Sea. The organization charters the Norwegian ship Ocean Viking in collaboration with the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. No injuries were reported, but the group said the vessel was damaged. Before the attack, the ship had rescued nearly 100 refugees stranded at sea, many fleeing war-torn Sudan. Libya's Coast Guard has received funding, equipment, and training from the European Union to crack down on refugees. In a major escalation against the independence of the Federal Reserve, President Trump said Monday he's firing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, the first black woman to sit on the central bank's board. Trump's claiming she committed mortgage fraud and that he's removing her immediately. Cook is holding firm, saying she intends to stay in her position. In a statement, she said, quote, President Trump purported to fire me for cause when no cause exists under the law, and he has no authority to do so. I will not resign. I will continue to carry out my duties to help the American economy as I have been doing since 2022, she wrote. Trump has also repeatedly threatened to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell as he pressures the Fed to lower interest rates. President Trump signed an executive order on Monday that would establish specialized National Guard units to be quickly deployed in Washington, D.C. and all 50 states. Under the order, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will oversee the National Guard assisting local law enforcement in, quote, quelling civil disturbances, unquote. Elizabeth Goitein of the Brennan Center for Justice said, quote, having soldiers police protests as this order envisions threatens fundamental liberties and public safety. It violates a centuries-old principle against involving the military in domestic law enforcement, she said. This comes just weeks after Trump deployed the National Guard to Washington, despite the fact the district's violent crime rate is at its lowest level in decades. Trump has also threatened to send troops to cities like New York, Baltimore, and Chicago. On Monday, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker joined Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and other city officials to condemn Trump's threats.
Donald Trump wants to use the military to occupy a U.S. city. punish his dissidents, and score political points. If this were happening in any other country, we would have no trouble calling it what it is, a dangerous power grab.
More than 180 Federal Emergency Management Agency employees sent a letter to Congress Monday warning FEMA's Trump-appointed, inexperienced leaders are putting the agency's work at risk, which could result in disasters as catastrophic as Hurricane Katrina. The dissenting staffers say Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and acting FEMA Administrator David Richardson lack the qualifications and authority to oversee FEMA's operations. The letter came just days before the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, one of the deadliest and costliest hurricanes in U.S. history. At least 36 employees have signed their full names to the letter titled The Katrina Declaration. About 150 others have signed the letter anonymously. At the White House, President Trump repeatedly praised North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un during a meeting with South Korea's leader Monday, saying he would like to meet with Kim again sometime in the future.
Kim Jong-un. I hope it stays that way. I think it will. I have a very good relationship. I understand him. I spent a lot of free time with him, talking about things that we probably aren't supposed to talk about. And, I get along with him really well. I think he is a country of great potential, tremendous potential.
A series of executive orders signed by President Trump Monday are drawing nationwide backlash, including a measure that aims to eliminate cashless bail and threatens to cut federal funding to Washington, D.C., as well as other jurisdictions that continue to implement the policy. Cashless bail is a system in which people accused of minor offenses are released from jail while awaiting trial without having to pay a specific cash amount. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast when we go to Chicago. On Monday, Trump signed a separate executive order mandating federal agencies, quote, vigorously prosecute anyone who burns the United States flag. The order also directs administration officials to revoke the visas of immigrants accused of desecrating the flag. Trump's order defies a 1989 Supreme Court ruling that determined the burning of a U.S. flag is protected speech under the First Amendment. After Trump signed the executive order, Secret Service agents arrested a person who set a U.S. flag on fire on Lafayette Square across from the White House. The man identified himself as a combat veteran who served for 20 years. His protest was captured in a video posted to social media by the news outlet The Bulwark.
No president can make a law, period. No Congress will make a law infringing on First Amendment rights. I'm burning this flag as a protest to that illegal fascist president that sits in that house.
And President Trump's former labor secretary, Alex Acosta, will testify in front of a House oversight panel next month about brokering a plea deal with the dead serial sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Acosta was the former U.S. attorney for South Florida when he offered a non-prosecution agreement to Epstein back in 2008, allowing him to plead guilty to a single state charge, which ended the FBI's investigation without federal charges. In his first term, Trump appointed Alex Acosta labor secretary. He was forced to resign in 2019 following criticism of his handling of Epstein's plea deal. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer has also issued a subpoena to Epstein's estate for a birthday book compiled by his associate Ghislaine Maxwell, which reportedly contains birthday messages from Epstein's wealthy and connected friends like President Trump. Comer's also requesting, quote, any document or record that could be reasonably construed to be a potential list of clients, unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Coming up, we speak to Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, about Israel's attack on Nasser Hospital in Gaza that killed 21 people, including five journalists. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday I saw you standing there with your hand against the pane, looking out the window at the rain. And I wanted to tell you all your tears were not in vain, but I guess we both knew we'd never be the same.
Peaceable Kingdom by Patti Smith, performed at Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary. Next February will be our 30th anniversary. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Human rights and press freedom groups are denouncing Israel's attack on Nasser Hospital in Gaza Monday that killed at least 21 journalists, that killed at least 21 people, including five journalists. According to eyewitnesses, Israel carried out a double-tap strike on the hospital. In the initial strike, a drone hit Husama Masri, a cameraman who worked for Reuters. Then another strike, minutes later, hit journalists and rescue workers who were responding to the initial strike. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed the hospital attack was a, quote, tragic mishap. But just hours later, Israeli forces killed a sixth journalist, Hassan Duhan, a well-known editor at Ahayat al-Jadida. He was killed when an Israeli tank shelled a tent sheltering displaced people in Khan Yunis. Over the past 23 months, Israel's barred all foreign journalists from reporting inside Gaza while systematically killing Palestinian journalists. According to one count, Israel's killed at least 245 journalists. On Monday, Thibault Bruton, the director general of Reporters Without Borders, denounced Israel's attacks on journalists.
When and where is it going to end? Are we going to let the Israel Defense Forces continue the repeated killing of journalists? There is international law. There are guarantees that should be granted to journalists covering conflicts. And none of that seems to be applying. So we need to be very clear about the fact that none of the journalists that are allegedly terrorists are terrorists. They are professional journalists working for legacy professional media, like, for example, Reuters or, for example, AP.
In other news from Gaza, three more Palestinians have starved to death, bringing the total to at least 303. We're joined right now by Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. She's joining us from Tunis, Tunisia. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Francesca Albanese. Can you start off by responding to the killing of the, at this point in the last day, six journalists, five of them in a double-tap strike on Nasser Hospital?
Thank you, Jaime. Yeah, of course. Look, in a situation of conflicts, targeting or killing journalists is unlawful. Journalists, as doctors and medical personnel and rescues, all those who have been killed in this attack are civilians. So killing them is unlawful. They are protected under international humanitarian law. However, here, it's not an isolated incident. Journalists have been killed in such high numbers. Some say 200 have been documented. Al Jazeera speaks of 270 journalists killed. So there is a pattern of targeting and killing journalists that let us think that there is an intention behind it. There is a widespread and systematic attack against them, like there is a systematic and widespread attack against civilians. And this might qualify as also as a crime against humanity in and of itself. However, I want to remind everyone that we are on the 688th day of the assault against Gaza, which an increasing consensus denounces as genocidal. And there is famine, and there is a complete destruction of all landscapes in Gaza. So the question is, what are member states waiting exactly to intervene and stop this carnage?
And Francesca Albanese, you have said that there has to be response. You've called for sanctions against Israel. Could you talk about how those might work, especially as you mentioned the fact that state governments are not taking any action?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I would like people to understand this in the broader context of international law. No later than last year, the International Court of Justice has confirmed that Israel's presence in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem is unlawful, must be dismantled totally and unconditionally. And the General Assembly has also given Israel a very generous deadline of 1 year to do so, which will expire in a month from now. In the face of this, member states have an obligation not to aid and assist in any possible ways a state like Israel in maintaining the situation created by Israel's unlawful presence. So while it is abhorrent that they are not stopping Israel, this delay increases their level of responsibility, their violation of international law, and possibly their complicity with the crimes that Israel is committing. This is why my recommendations are for member states who do not want to incur in their legal responsibilities and also out of humanity to break the siege. Member states who have a port in the Mediterranean Sea must absolutely send their navies under their national flag with humanitarian aid and doctors with food and baby formula, because 500,000 people, according to the United Nations, are really close to starvation. But also, as we see the Sumud flotilla, so ordinary citizens jumping on boats and trying to do what member states are not doing, I feel that it's totally moral and irresponsible to let individuals like this take this risk when it's a state obligation to break the siege. But also, it's time to cut ties with Israel, to cut trade, because this is also what the ICJ has reminded member states. They need to take all steps to prevent trade and investment relations that are assisting in the maintenance of Israel's unlawful presence. And we must recall that while Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, is also advancing, as I was saying in the beginning, annexation at an incredible speed. So there is no way out of this other than a firm and robust action from member states.
And I wanted to ask you, the Trump administration, instead of heeding your calls as the special rapporteur, have instead imposed sanctions on you, supposedly claiming that your naming of dozens of companies sort of profiting from the Israeli occupation and genocide in Gaza. And the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said, quote, Albanese's campaign of political and economic warfare against the United States and Israel will no longer be tolerated. Your response to these kinds of words from leaders of the United States?
Well, first of all, as a non-American, but as someone who has lived in the United States, I wonder how American people understand this, because of course it's a violation of the First Amendment, right? I mean, I've just done my job, which is a pro bono job. I've been requested by the United Nations to investigate and report on the most prominent violations of international law that occur in the occupied Palestinian territory. And I've simply stated facts according due process to businesses, say there is an economy of the occupation, and this is the reason why Israel has profited and has allowed private entities, arms manufacturers, even banks, pension funds, universities, really, to help and profit, to help it and profit from Israel's maintenance of the unlawful occupation. Now, this occupation has also turned into genocidal over the past 688 days, and they've denounced it. I've said, how come that Israelis were coming, many Israelis were becoming poorer and poorer, and the Israeli stock exchange kept on going up? Because of that, I've been sanctioned, which is something unprecedented that no states in 80 years of life of the United Nations have ever attempted, had ever dared, because it's absolute, it's a violation of international law, of the UN Charter, of the Convention on Privileges and Immunities. And still, the United Nations and the United States maintains the sanction, which has, which are now entering the second month. It's abominable. And this is the situation. But do you understand, against a person who has just written a report, I have been called a threat to global economy. It's clear that I've hit a nerve, but this is not the way to react to this.
I want to turn to the last story that the Reuters cameraman, Hussam Al-Masri, filmed before he was killed by Israel on Monday at Nasser Hospital. On Saturday, just 2 days before, Al-Masri shot this interview with Hikmat Fojo, a Palestinian woman whose relatives were killed in another Israeli strike.
While they were sleeping, they were hit by missiles. While they were sleeping, an entire family was lost, and he was praying. He was praying. He was praying. His children were gone. Two were martyred. They were born after 10 years of waiting. One was sleeping, and the woman's hands and legs. But God willing, it's all right. God willing. It doesn't matter. If my nephew's hand remains amputated, it doesn't matter. But may he stay alive, O Lord.
So that was the one of the last pieces of video that the Palestinian journalist, the Reuters journalist, Hussam Al-Masri, filmed before he was killed Monday in that double-tap strike. He had apparently was setting up a live stream at the fourth floor balcony, which journalists used, when he was hit. So now I want to go to Reuters reporter Steve Holland, who questioned President Trump about this in the Oval Office.
If we could get your reaction, sir, the Israelis bombed a hospital in Gaza that killed 20 people, including five journalists.
When did this happen?
This happened overnight, today.
I didn't know that.
Any reaction to this? Are
you going
to talk to
Prime Minister? I don't want to see it.
At the same time, we have to end that whole nightmare. I'm the one that got the hostages out. I got them out, all of them.
That was President Trump. Francesca Albanese, can you talk about the responsibility of the United States and tell us more about the mechanisms at the UN, since it's very clear they block any kind of action at the UN Security Council?
Yeah, as I said, there are clear indication, clear instructions from International Court of Justice on how to deal with the situation. The only lawful thing that Israel can do in the occupied Palestinian territory is to withdraw. Withdraw the troops, dismantle the settlements, stop exploiting Palestinian resources. In the face of this, any aid, any support, any exchange of commerce, military intelligence, and others from the United States or others is a breach of the obligation not to render aid and assistance in maintaining the situation. However, on top of this, there are proceedings for genocide pending before the International Court of Justice, which trigger an obligation to prevent, which as a minimum, as the ICJ has said in the case of Nicaragua versus Germany, entails the ban on transfer of weapons to a country, to a state which is committing violations of international humanitarian law, meaning even war crimes. You know, we don't even need to go and bother the Genocide Convention. So yet again, another layer of responsibility of the United States. And then there are proceedings against Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity, including starvation. Because of this, even if the United States is not a party to the ICC, it should be respectful of international law, international criminal law, and instead of giving of receiving the ICC wanted Netanyahu as if it was really a war hero, as it's been defined, the United States should facilitate justice and accountability. Instead, they are waging a war against the ICC itself, not just me. All the judges of the ICC have been sanctioned, and so the prosecutor of the court. So this is the situation. Of course, there are complicities on the side of this administration, and in my opinion, even in the on the on the